Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of The Show on Fire. I am one of your hosts, Sam Cushion, along with Alex Boyd.
Yeah!
I like how you're changing it up every week now.
I'm trying. I'm going to do something silly.
All right, and this week we are joined by Katie Parr, author of Alex in Wonderstrand. Hello, Katie.
Hey, what's up?
And today we're going to be talking about your book and about kind of your history with music inspired by literature, because I know you and I were both involved in the Twirock scene, and I think it's, has it really been 3 years since that happened?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Well, I think so. I was mostly involved in Twirock in 2009, so yeah. Well, yeah, it would be about 3 years now, so
that is crazy.
This is crazy, yeah. But,
all right, so
yeah,
for those who don't know, Katie was in a band called Bella Rocks, and I was doing Midnight Sun, and I just can't believe it's been 3 years. But anyway, now we're on to the Hunger Games. So,
yeah.
And let's just jump right into your book. Kind of give us, without any spoilers, what is Alex in Wonderstrand about?
Okay, so it's really hard to explain. When someone asks me what it's about, I say basically it's like a kind of a coming of age story of a 17-year-old kid named Alex, obviously. And it's set in this like alternate, not an alternate history per se, but it's kind of like another world. And it's very steampunk, very sci-fi, very non-classifiable. It's kind of hard to explain, but basically there was a big war that just got done. And his uncle, who was his guardian, was like the star general of the war. And Alex is kind of bitter about it because he didn't get to go to war. And all of his friends did, and they all died. So he feels bad. And this kind of spurns him to like figure out that, you know, maybe things aren't always like as they seem, you know. And it's just, he kind of finds out more about what this war actually was about, and that takes him on this massive adventure. And I know that a lot of people who have read it say that they didn't see any of what I wrote. They said that they didn't see any of that coming. So lots of twists and turns and crazy situations.
Cool. Sounds neat to me.
Yeah.
How would you compare Alex to Katniss?
Well, being that I just started reading Hunger Games, I'm not too familiar with the character of Katniss just yet, but, I would say that, you know, both of them are, they have good intentions, and they have this, like, inner longing to be someone, and also to, just, I think both of them are very brave characters deep down. But that's coming from a standpoint of someone that just started the Hunger Games series. So
I think you're on the right track.
Yeah. Okay.
So I know, that it's a steampunk book, right? That you'd call it steampunk.
Right.
And, so what inspired you to write this story as, a steampunk novel?
Well, I've always been intrigued with the genre of steampunk. It's very different. It's something that breaks the rules of literature, I think. That's how it kind of started out, was a genre that took science fiction from the universes and the skies and stuff and brought it down to an Earth level. You know, that's what they say. They say that it's more of a industry science fiction instead of a Star Wars or Star Trek type science fiction. So I've always been intrigued with the aesthetic of steampunk, and this one is almost, I call it steampunk, but it can almost be classified as like borderline, like new age steampunk. It's very, very different than what people might classify as steampunk. So, yeah. Does that answer the question? I don't even know. Yeah, what inspired me? You know, I like the movie, the Disney version of Treasure Island, but it's Treasure Planet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I really like that movie. So that's kind of a cyberpunk, but, you know, it's still cool. That kind of inspired me, too.
I just saw that movie recently, and, yeah, it's really cool. So you said you just started reading The Hunger Games. What do you think so far? Do you like it? Is it kind of predictable to you? What do you think?
It was hard at first because, well, first of all, I didn't like Suzanne Collins for the longest time before The Hunger Games even came out. So when it did come out, one of my friends was like, you know, you need to read The Hunger Games. It's like right up your alley. You know, this is something you'd be interested in. And I was really reluctant, mostly because Suzanne Collins' first series was very, very similar to a book I was writing at the time. And I thought, oh, man, we have the same subconscious. Like, I can't even know. But when I started reading The Hunger Games, it was hard at first because it's told in the present tense. And I like to write and I like to read stories that are told in the past tense. So it was kind of hard to get past that at first. But it's very, very like short and to the point. Like the sentences are clear and it's not like you're reading through crazy detail. You know, it's just like a very quick read, I think.
Yeah. Alex, is there anything you wanted to talk about?
Well, excuse me. I am doing a little research on Bella Rocks here. Because nice. You guys have not done anything for 3 years on Twirock, but I just wrote my my second Twilight theme song for my next album. And okay. I'm really interested in it, so.
Nice.
Talk about the music.
Okay. Before we go to that real quick, let's talk about where people can find your work and your book. Just go ahead and give us your website, Twitter, anything like that.
All right. Well, if you are looking to buy my book, you can check it out on Amazon. Just type it in the search box, Alex in Wonderstrand, The Clairvoyance Clock. You can also find me on Goodreads. I love that website. It's amazing. Goodreads.com/KMPar. That's my author profile there. You can reach me on Twitter at KMPar, or my main author website is KMParBooks.com. So check any of those out. And, yeah, be part of the awesomeness.
All right. Well, I guess we'll talk a little bit about Twirock and how kind of how we met. So I know it was 2008 is when the movie came out.
Yeah.
So it was like the summer before the movie came out. And there was Mitch Hanson Band and then the Bella Colon Project. And I think you were doing Bella Rocks and then the Twilighters. Those were you guys were the first four that I kind of found out about. And I had never written any music about books before. I've been writing music for a long time, but never about books. And I'd heard of Wizard Rock, but I never really got too into it. But then I found out about this, and I had just finished reading Twilight, and I immediately thought, oh, I gotta write some music about this. So I wrote like 9 or 10 songs real quick and put out a CD, and then started twirock.com.
Yeah.
And so much happened in like just 6 months between then and the movie coming out and then New Moon coming out that next year. It was so crazy, but it was so much fun.
Yeah. That was like an amazing time of my life as well. I mean, it's crazy how like popularity of this music just exploded. And I think it was all due to the movie coming out. Obviously the books were very popular at the time, and we hit the industry at just the right time. And then it just exploded. And the fandom was very, I think for the most part, the fandom liked the fact that there were songs based on the books, and being that, you know, Wizard Rock kind of preceded us, that definitely helped as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to put down Twilight because obviously I'm a fan, but I think as far as comparing the two fandoms to being accepting to music that was written by fans, I've found the Hunger Games fan community a little bit not any more accepting, but just less critical. In the sense that Twilight fans, they wanted the official soundtrack. They wanted, and some of them really, really enjoyed what we were doing, and it was great. But I think that they didn't really have the mentality for it to sustain itself. And so, a year after Twilight came out, you know, and then New Moon came out, I don't think any of us were still writing music, were we? I know the Bella Cullen Project had just disbanded after TwiCon, and that was summer of 2009. Yeah. And then Mitch Hanson Band, they released a CD that summer, but I don't think they were really doing much after that. I stopped writing music, so I think it came to a complete stop all of a sudden.
So what you're saying is that the Twilight fan community is a bunch of noobs.
Yes, in a way.
You look at Wizard Rock and the Harry Potter fandom and how long that's been going on and how it continues to go even after the last movie's out. You know, it's still strong as ever and it's amazing and I love it. But with Twilight, the whole that fan created part of the fandom just kind of stopped after the first movie. You know, in between the first and second movie, it just became about the movies and no one wanted anything else.
Yeah, I did see that. I did see right at the beginning of my music career, if you want to call it that, there's a lot of enthusiasm. But then, like you said, as the movies went on, people were very critical in that they wanted it to be maybe more of a professional sound. And, you know, when you think of Wizard Rock or when you think of something else, I mean, that's a little bit more like garage bandy. And people still like it, you know, and they like the music. They like the books, obviously, still. And
what was kind of ironic about it was the soundtrack was all, you know, that indie rock feel. But then they weren't very accepting to anything that wasn't on the official soundtrack. It's kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, exactly. I'm kind of like clumping the entire fandom into one. We were still getting a bunch of really good responses from people. I don't want people to be like, I still liked it, you know, because there were a bunch of people who did, but I think just as a whole there weren't enough of those people to kind of sustain all the musicians to keep creating music.
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way.
Because their conventions, you know, they turned into the official Twilight conventions, which was amazing. I thought that was great. But then they stopped having all the fans on to do their music. Because I know at the beginning it was like they were having all the fans, you know, everyone who made music about it, you know, come play a convention. Mm-hmm. It was so neat because you got to meet the actors, you got to interact with fans, you got to go to the convention, perform your music. It was great.
Yeah.
And then just like that summer, everything else stopped, they stopped doing that too. And just kind
I know. I definitely played. I played at one of their shows, their conventions, and it was one of the best shows that I did that summer. And it was quite an experience. And there was a lot of good response. But after a while, I think they just, you know, they wanted the people that brought in the most attention, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
Well, also, the Twilight and Forks convention. You know, I didn't get to go to that, but I watched the prom performances on the internet live. How cool was that? Because I remember everyone talking about it when they were back, and I was just thinking, I was supposed to go to that, and I didn't go, and I felt so stupid for not going. But I know that must have been like an awesome experience.
It was awesome, to this day, I still think about that time, and I really want to go back to Washington. Like, it's just an amazing place in general, but I feel like that convention was a little bit more accepting of Twi Rock. because those people that were there were hardcore fans, and I don't know, it was just so much fun. It was crazy to say, oh my gosh, I was performing in Forks High School. Like, who says that? But it was a great time.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was quite an amazing part of my life. And like I said, like to this day, 2009 best years of my life, just because remains one of the best. I got to experience so many amazing things like the Creation Entertainment Convention and the summer school in Forks and all of that. So it was great.
Yeah, and if you're anything like me, it was kind of the first time anybody noticed my music that I was making. And so it was really neat because right at the beginning, you know, it was, you were releasing this music and people were listening and they were getting excited about it and they wanted more. And you're like, really? You want more of my music?
Yeah.
Here, have it, take it, you know? But yeah, I really, at the beginning, I thought it was going to be able to sustain itself, but it just, in the end, it didn't. So I'm kind of hoping with the Hunger Games, you know, the way it's looking now, I think it'll be able to sustain itself because there's so many people getting into it so early. You know, we still have 3 months until the movie, and it's just like blowing up, the fandom is. And so, and the thing is, there's so many fans creating so many things other than just music or, you know, just trailers or whatever. There's just so much going on that I think that aspect of this fandom will be able to last for a long time.
Which definitely
really excites me.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, if you'll recall back to an earlier episode when we talked about the future of Hunger Games music, and I said, you know, the conventions will be what sustains it.
Yeah.
I think this is proof that the conventions have to allow us all to play.
Well, yeah, like
we're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, like with the Creation Twilight ones, when they stopped, that's funny. That is really when it kind of stopped. People stopped caring about the fan-made music. What I was saying is, I think it's more of there just weren't very many people doing it. So unless the five of us were continually releasing music all the time, it kind of just slowly died off because there weren't very many people making music. Whereas the Hunger Games already, I'm seeing, you know, more and more people making it every day. There's not just those, you know, three or four or five main people doing it and then, you know, a song here and there. It's really starting to populate itself.
But yeah, I wrote a song called Nothing Is My Song, and it's based on Twilight, so.
Is it serious or is it joking?
Oh, it's very serious. It's the most depressing song that I've written in a long time, so.
Since your Hair Ribbons and Rainbow CD?
Yeah, pretty much. But this album I'm writing right now is kind of like nerdy songs where people in clubs wouldn't realize they're so nerdy. So it's kind of, it doesn't explicitly say, you know, Bella or Edward or anything, but it's definitely about Bella right after the time Edward leaves her. So it's very depressing.
We should co-write a rap song. I don't know why I'm stuck on rap. I just think because there's not enough fan-made rap music. We should co-write a rap song called "A Sparkle in the Sun."
Dude, you send me a beat, man. I'll write a rap.
That's the best.
Okay, well, we're gonna go ahead and take our music break real fast and listen to one of James Newton Howard's songs from The Village, and this one is called "The Gravel Road." So we'll be right back. Thank you. And we're back. And our next topic is James
like
Newton.
Like a pro, Sam.
Yeah, like a... Welcome to the show on fire. So our next topic is James Newton Howard. And so everybody knows that he has replaced Danny Elfman as the composer for The Hunger Games. This is kind of old news, but relevant to our show, so I figured we'd talk about it. And do you guys, have either one of you ever heard anything by James Newton Howard? I know you probably have, but do you realize you have? What should I say?
I've really only heard.
Well, you said didn't you say that he was the one that composed Social Network and yeah?
Oh no, that was Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. But no, James Newton Howard.
Oh, that was someone else. Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, you know, I can't say that I've heard anything by him.
Well, I'll throw some names out there and let you see. James Newton Howard composed The Village. He did I Am Legend.
Oh, okay.
Most recently, he did The Green Lantern. He did Peter Jackson's remake of King Kong. He is the co-composer for Batman Begins and The Dark Knight with Hans Zimmer, which are two of my favorite scores.
Okay.
So what was funny was when they announced Danny Elfman was going to compose for The Hunger Games, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, it's going to be cool. It'll be unique. It'll be different. Because I really thought he did a good job when he composed for Big Fish. And because most people associate Danny Elfman with Tim Burton. But he also did Big Fish, which was completely different than anything else he had done.
Yeah.
But then they announced that he wasn't going to do it anymore and that James Newton Howard was going to take his place. And I was, needless to say, very excited because he was one of my first choices for The Hunger Games. I think the score he did for I Am Legend and The Village, those are two of my favorite scores, you know. There's John Williams is kind of like he's set a bar. He's up there all by himself. But other than John Williams, you know, James Newton Howard, Hans Zimmer, Brian Tyler, those are some of my favorite composers. And so to have James Newton Howard composing this and have T-Bone Burnett be in charge of like the soundtrack and the music is it's going to be such an amazing compilation of music that I can't wait to hear what comes out of it.
Me too. I'm really excited to hear. You know, hear what he thinks is a good music representation of The Hunger Games. I think that's going to be really interesting. But yeah.
Well, I think it's going to have a lot of like the solo violin Appalachian kind of sound. Kind of what he did with The Village, but not as I don't know how to explain it. You know, me and Alex were talking earlier because in The Green Lantern, he uses in The Dark Knight Rises or The Dark Knight, he uses a lot of electronic synths sounds, and so I was talking to Alex earlier about how I think you know the difference between the way he writes when they're in District 12, when they're in the Capitol, and then when they're in the arena, it's going to be. I think there's going to be so many different themes. You know, you're gonna have that organic Appalachian sound in the districts, the Capitol. I can see a whole lot more kind of glitched out drums, percussion, kind of a darker more electronic sound, and then in the arena kind of a mash of both of those where it's very action-packed, of course, and then you've got your organic sounds because they're not in the Capitol, but then again between the action and the fact that it's a Capitol game and it's kind of got that overhanging sense of the Capitol is always there. It's just, I can't wait to hear the themes that he's going to come up with. And,
I agree.
And a lot of people were saying when they switched, they're like, how is he going to compose an entire score this quick? You know, the movie comes out in March, but what a bunch of people, I think they don't understand is music is one of the very last things done in a movie. You know, the movie normally is at least the scenes that they're writing the music for, if not the whole movie, is already edited and cut together when they're writing. Because, you have to write cues for specific moments. And so, like, if Katniss turns and fires an arrow and it hits something, and a cymbal or percussion downbeat is supposed to hit as soon as that hits something, and the scene's not edited and they cut 11 frames out, then the arrow's going to hit before the music. So music is one of the last things written in any movie. And also, when James Newton Howard did Peter Jackson's King Kong back in 2005, James Horner was originally supposed to be the one doing the music for that. And James Horner, he composed for Avatar and Titanic and a bunch of James Cameron's movies. But anyway, he was supposed to do... I want to say The Hobbit because I'm thinking Peter Jackson. He was supposed to do King Kong. And so I think it was 7 weeks before the movie was released, James Horner quit. And they brought in James Newton Howard, and he came in and composed somewhere around 2 hours, if not more, of music in 5 or 6 weeks. And he composed, they recorded it, and the movie came out on time. So I think if anyone can do it in a short time frame, you know, given, I mean, 3 months, that's not too short, but we'll say two because of, they have to distribute it and stuff. But anyway, I think if anyone can do it, it's going to be James Newton Howard. And, you know, I think he's one of the few composers who can do something like this in such a short time frame, but still put out such good quality work that you're not going to lose anything, because he has such a short time frame to do it. So those are my two cents on the whole situation.
That's a good point. And I mean, like you said, people don't really understand the movie making process. And like, obviously, like you said too, I mean, composing is the last piece of the puzzle. So, he'll definitely do it. I'm just really excited for the whole finished product to come together. And like, I'm really, really excited for the movie. I think it's going to be great, and I haven't even read the books.
It's going to be great.
Like, all the way.
Alex, do you have any thoughts on James Newton Howard?
I'm glad he's got the job, and I can't wait to hear it all. I've really learned a lot about scores through my time being friends with you, Sam, so I'm looking forward to some of the weird things that he has done in the past and seeing how he can apply it to this story. So,
and you know what's going to be really cool about it is they're doing kind of an Alice in Wonderland type thing where they, I think that's what they're doing. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that during the movie, it's going to be all orchestral music, you know, all composed by James Newton Howard. It's going to be the score. And then they're going to release an accompanying soundtrack of music, you know, like the Safe and Sound song by Taylor Swift and the Civil Wars, along with, I think, Arcade Fire and the Decemberists are going to be on there as well. So in the actual movie, there's not going to be any, I don't want to say music because there's going to be music, but there's not going to be any, you know, like Taylor Swift or Arcade Fire. There's not going to be any like indie music or rock music. It's going to be all orchestral, traditional scored music, which I particularly like, just because I think that kind of adds a sense of, you know, not a sense of, but it kind of adds a timeless value to the movie on top of its content already, because you don't have music that can be associated with now. So, like, you know, I know Star Wars back in the 70s, they originally, the producers wanted to use disco music for it to make it more popular. And George Lucas was like, no, we're not going to do that. And then one of the most memorable movie scores of all time is, you know, John Williams' Star Wars scores. And the same thing with Jaws and any really famous movie that you can think of, you know, of course not every single one, but a lot of them, you know, all the Harry Potter movies, they're all completely orchestral. And, you know, I'm kind of biased, I think, but I really like that. Not that I don't like having, you know, I don't want to say modern music. I don't know how to explain, but it's not that I don't like having bands and singers and things like that in movies. It's just, I think with something as big as The Hunger Games or Harry Potter or Star Wars, you need something that adds that timeless nature that orchestral music does. And it adds that unique sense to it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I really like how they did that with Alice in Wonderland, just because, you know, I bought that accompanying CD that had like all the popular bands singing songs based on the film. And I really liked how that was a separate deal, because you still got those songs, but yet the movie was all orchestral and I mean, because
Alice
in Wonderland,
Alice in Wonderland, that I think that is one of Danny Elfman's best scores, you know. And so it was so neat to have the entire movie be just that score, but then also be able to get the accompanying soundtrack. And I think doing this with The Hunger Games is a brilliant idea.
Yeah, definitely. It'll bring in, I think, a lot more fans that way, too. It'll attract people.
I definitely agree. And I think that's all we have to say about James Newton Howard. I think we all approve very much.
Well, yeah, I'm excited.
He's wiping the sweat off his brow right now, knowing that he has our approval.
Yeah, that was his the last of his worries. He had to, if he had our approval, he could continue. Awkward pause.
I was wondering if it was him pausing again.
Yeah, my mind just like drew a complete blank. All right, so Alex, do you know of any upcoming events, news, anything with Rocking J, Wizard Rock, any kind of fan-made music coming up?
No, not since the last week. I posted my first song for the Proper Nouns.
That's right.
However, my cohorts have been very disappointing, so to speak, this week.
Didn't get theirs up.
Yeah, they didn't get theirs up. But I always say, you know, the first step is the hardest one to take. So I totally expected there to be kinks that need to be worked out. So we're working it all out. Hopefully, other songs will get posted really soon. I've already got my second video ready to go. So
nice.
I'm the man that's like always totally prepared and ready to go. So
I know it's funny, because when we were starting this show, I came to you and I was like, hey, do you want to do a show? And you're like, yeah, that'd be great. And like 3 weeks later, you're like, so when are we going to start?
Exactly.
I was like, I guess we'll start now.
I'm a man of action. All right.
And that's good. Otherwise, this show would never exist. But yeah, so you've got the Proper Nouns thing going on, and I am actually working on a new secret project that I can't announce right now because I don't have all the details worked out. This is going to be our cliffhanger.
Now we're all curious.
This is going to be our cliffhanger, because a few weeks ago you got the Proper Nouns as your cliffhanger.
Yes. So people were like freaking out too. They were like, what the heck, Alex? You going to say something and not tell us? Oh, all the emails I got, let me tell you.
But yeah, I don't have an actual name for it yet, but it's going to be music that I've written along with original literature written by friends of mine, and we're going to combine the two in very unique and neat and awesome ways. That's going to be really cool.
Cool.
Nice.
I like when things get combined into neat things.
Well, there's
me too.
Like sprinkles and apple pie. If you've never tried that, it's amazing.
Sounds good. All right. And of course, if you haven't already, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to us. Just search for The Show on Fire or Hunger Games Show on Fire. Pretty much anything with Show on Fire, you'll find us. And it's absolutely free. You even get the episodes before they air on Panem Radio. So you get them early, it's free. There's absolutely no reason you shouldn't go. And of course, you should 5-star it and tell us how cool you think we are.
Yes, please do that.
We still don't have a Twitter or a Facebook. I know last week I said I would get on that, and of course, unlike Alex, I'm not a man of action, and I didn't get it done. But
And next... I may be a man of action, but I am not a man of technical know-how.
Well, next week for sure we'll have our own Show on Fire Facebook and Twitter page that Alex and I both will be tweeting from and posting cool, fun stuff. And of course, you can check out Show on Fire, Haymitch Happy Hour, Cinna's Reading Room, a whole bunch of really cool Hunger Games programming made by fans for fans at panemradio.com. Everyone should go check that out, and it's the best way to stay updated with all of this. Anything else you'd like to say, Alex?
Nope, I'm good, man.
Okay. And of course, we want to thank Katie for coming on and talking about her book and our experience with Twi-Rock and how awesome that was. So thank you, Katie, for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure having you.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me on your show.
And once again, everyone, check out, what's that URL? Go to, is it Katie Parr Books or is it KM Parr Books?
It's kmparrbooks.com. That's okay. my main author site. So check it out.
Yeah. Everyone go there and check that out and make sure you grab a copy of Alex and Wonderstrand. That's all I got. So I guess we will see all of you guys next week. Bye.